ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast with Harf and Ben. Daniel Harford, the former AFLW Coach of the Year in 2019, former Hawk and Blue, myself, Ben Cameron. Five drops per week, five different flavours. Be a friend, tell a friend about the podcast and go on to the Wall of Fame. Daniel Harford, we have just watched one of the worst games of football I've seen for a while.
Ever.
Oh, I've just gone outside, wiped my eyes, washed them clean with some soap. North Melbourne defeating Essendon by 14 points. Our first takeaway, that was the worst 14-point loss I've ever seen.
Well, the scary part was there was almost a chance that they could win that game at one stage, the Bombers, in the last quarter when they kicked a couple of goals early. Three of the first four goals I kicked in the last quarter, and it was almost a bit of a sniff. Hang on a second. This could be one of the most amazing things we've ever seen in our time. No, it was bad. It was bad. And the Kangas were not good, but the Bombers were so bad. And it's the whole energy around Essendon is this building towards this new Essendon, and but old Essendon making the new Essendon, if you know what I mean. So you expect spirit and fight and a bit of energy, and there was nothing of that from the Bombers today. And the Kangas sort of, I don't know if they fell into that that vibe of just sort of not being fully wound up, fully switched on. They dominated the game, but they weren't able to dominate the scoreboard. And that was incredibly frustrating as much as the Essendon players and performance was poor. The fact that the Kangas couldn't dominate the game when they really should have was incredibly frustrating.
They kicked 9-19. Essendon kicked 9-11. Just on the Dons and what they put up, they've won one game of their last 28 now. And some of these numbers, someone needs to tell Essendon that defence isn't just to keep the sheep in the paddock, because 35 tackles for the game, 13 in the second half, and 9 players who did not lay a tackle. Like, they haven't been able to defend ball movement. Yeah. They haven't been able to attitudinally show that they want to defend. Like, this is a really big hole. And yeah, we know where they're at, but it hasn't improved with the caretaker coach. And they go on a coach search, but it's ugly.
Yeah, it's going to take some time to get out of this. And you think about what's coming in the next couple of years with Tasmania, and the best kids will be gone. So you've got to try and find a way in by trading players. But you're going to trade good players for good picks. So it's just the cycle will be really nasty for the Bombers if they can't get this batch right. And so this is why they have to sell Zach Merritt. And cash him in for as much as they can while they can. He's not going to be a part of the next premiership team. He wants out. They have to sell that. Should have done it last year, in my view. Even though, you know, three first rounders at 18 and 20 is not really first rounders in the traditional sense, top tens, clearly. So I can understand why they were hesitant to a degree. But if they knew they were in a situation where they're going to have to build and get this thing back on track after a few failed drafts and exit suppliers and just a lack of quality, they should have done that last year. So this is going to be a slow burn. It could be Ronald Dale Barassi himself come back, and the great Norm Smith could come back, and they would still battle with what's happening at the Bombers at the moment.
Yeah, we love the saying in footy, it's never as bad as it seems, it's never as good as it seems.
Yes.
For Essendon, it might be as bad as it seems at the moment. We did speak to Dan McPherson, who's the GM of football at the Essendon Football Club, today, pre-game, and I started off by asking him about what he told the board and the CEO, Tim Roberts, who put together the criteria for the new coach, about what kind of coach this group needs.
Yeah, well, there was a number of people within the club that have been consulted on it. Tim and Caroline Monson, who's running it from the people and culture perspective, she's interviewed quite a number of people across the club. So we've all sort of put our thoughts into the mixing pot, and they've come up with the criteria.
Are you a believer that it needs to be an Essendon person?
No, I think it just needs to be the best coach for this group. I think that the Essendon person narrative is severely overplayed, and I think we just need the best coach for this playing group and this club.
So that was Dan McPherson earlier. You asked a great question of him too as to whether they would have Josh Fraser as part of their process.
Yeah.
Oh, I think they should pick up the phone and call Josh Fraser and see if he would be a part of their process and say, look, I think he is a part of the Carlton. He's in the running for the Carlton gig.
Yep.
Despite what he's saying, which is a smart public hand to play, if you will. But
yep.
I think they should say, look, even if you don't believe you're ready, we believe you are. We want you a part of our process.
I think they should make that public. I'm 100% with you. I know I'm with you on the current situation with him as well. Just play dumb, play dead, just keep going as you're going, and we'll talk to you later on. I think that's what's going to happen there with Josh Fraser or Carlton. But if I'm Essendon, I would make that public. Now that they've got their panel together and they've said they're going to talk to 10 or 15 guys, I would make public that we want to talk to Josh Fraser about his future and what we think he can do at the Bombers.
Force Carlton's hand, wouldn't
Absolutely
it?
Absolutely would.
Could you imagine that?
Why wouldn't they? Like, he's clearly doing a hell of a job. We all understand that. And yes, it's caretaker mode and all that, but he's proven himself to change the game. He's educated players. He's made good players better. He's got the best out of their champions, which is a big thing, just by the way. So if I'm Essendon, I'm making that very public and putting as much pressure on Carlton as possible.
North Melbourne, not overly impressive in the game, it has to be said. Nope. Harry Sheezel did rack up 43 disposals. Also, Nick Larkey, who was once the most reliable set shot in the game, kicked 1 goal, 5. So he's a little errant, but they are in the 10, North Melbourne, and they have won 8 games this year. So they have improved. I mean, they hadn't won more than 5 for a number of years, and they've bounced that up to 8 this year with still 8 games remaining. So we'll see where that ends up.
And they've won 3 in a row for the first time in 7 years.
Yep.
So there's markers along the way that they're reaching, and they're saying, yeah, okay, we're better. Where that leads, we don't know, but they're better.
They're certainly better. The showdown last night put Adelaide defeating the Crows by 26 points. And our takeaway here is, where does Daniel Harford stand on whether this is the best rivalry in footy?
It's number one. I don't think there's any doubt. Is there any doubt that this is the best rivalry in footy? What would come close? In the old days, it was... Old days, it was Collingwood Carlton. Then it was Sydney West Coast for a bit. That was good fun through that premiership era for both those two teams. But that hasn't happened for a long time.
Great Western. Hawthorn Bulldogs and GWS.
No.
For a little while.
Didn't
quite reach the heights. Too small. Not overly well-supported clubs.
Yeah, or overly successful grand scheme of things. Hawthorn Geelong's been good fun through the last couple of decades.
Sydney Derby's been good.
Yeah.
Sneaky good. And there's a bit of dislike and like that.
Bit of tension.
Genuine dislike.
But I think the showdown, showdown's often one of the best matches of the year.
Yeah.
So that's what creates the rivalry. It's not just the history necessarily. It's about how they compete against each other when they get the chance to face off. And that's what I love about the Adelaide Derby. I think it's magnificent. And I get enthralled. Now, I don't set my clock to too many fixtures through the year, but I make sure I know when the showdowns are being played.
Yeah. I agree.
Port Adelaide and Adelaide. It's number one by a mile.
It's like a set your watch to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, make sure you're on the couch. Standalone time slot, Saturday night, which I loved. You've got to understand.
Well, Friday night was a doubleheader Friday night last time, wasn't it? It was lost.
Yeah.
And it was that the
great game, yeah.
Yeah, cracking game.
That was when Dwayne Russell's skinny cook kicked the winning
goal. That's right.
Was the line, beware of the skinny cook.
Yeah. It's a great line.
It's good from Dwayne, isn't it?
I
really like it. You've got to understand the history of the rivalry to really appreciate it. So for anyone who's not from South Australia, doesn't understand it, and this is the rough outline, so don't hold me to all of it, but basically Port Adelaide wanted to enter the AFL, had been the dominant club in the SANFL for a long period of time, wanted to enter the AFL as Port Adelaide. Essentially, that can't happen. We need our own Adelaide team. Adelaide came into existence, eventually put Adelaide into the competition. But there's a lot of ill feeling from that initial resistance for Port Adelaide to enter the competition and what eventually became Adelaide. That's why it is such a still strong rivalry with genuine dislike and disdain.
Yeah, and I think even just the history of Port Adelaide as a footy club, full stop. They've prided themselves on being one of the great clubs in Australian football, and let alone South Australian football. So to get the chance after some pain and suffering for not being there for a decade or so, to get the chance to be on that big stage again, on the biggest stage of all in the Australian Football League, it's a chance to stamp themselves again as the best club. And I love the fact that they wear the prison bar jumper in that. I think it's fabulous. It's great theatre as much as anything else.
Which makes sense. It makes sense, doesn't it? Like, if they wanted to enter the comp as Port Adelaide, but they're blocked by Adelaide, then they get that throwback to their history wearing the prison bars with the it was the Invincibles jumper.
Which Collingwood stopped them wearing because it's so similar to their jumper. So there's that little bit of up you as well. It's good. I like that version of Port Adelaide.
Yeah, Josh Carr's first showdown win as a coach too, went 10-0 as a player. He was also involved in the Ramsgate incident.
Oh, he was.
When they had a little Barney at a pub down in Glenelg after a showdown, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I think we had Simon Goodwin on pregame earlier this year, and I think Declan Byrne sort of said, oh, mate, should we ask him about the showdown last night? I think we had him on the Saturday and it happened on the Friday night. I said, oh, I wonder if he was involved in the Ramsgate punch-up. Search it on Google. It said he was credited with throwing the first swing, I think. Goody, I hope that's
Shop
correct.
Early,
if not, I'm happy to apologise and say it wasn't Goody and correct that, but there you have it.
No, it's the best rivalry in footy, the showdown. It's fabulous. More of it, I say. More of it.
Mm. So Zach Butters was a central figure here, Harv.
Yes.
Playing what may well be his final showdown. And he spoke to, he was enormous throughout the game as well, just quietly. He had 13 clearances as well as just dominating the stats line over the course of the afternoon and evening, or the evening it was. And he spoke to Kath Lachlan post-game.
You've obviously got a big decision to make at season's end. Did it cross your mind at all tonight that this could be your last showdown?
Yeah, it definitely did, and whatever happens at the end of the year. But yeah, what a crowd, and it's so special to play in these games. And I love the footy club, and I love my teammates, and that win makes it extra special.
The genius of that was the setup from Kath. Mm. She buttered him up.
Little leading question.
She was buttering him up early, and then she went with the leading question, which gave us what we wanted without hitting him between the eyes with the question. It was very good from Kath.
Craft. A little bit of craft.
Spot on. Broadcasting media craft there from Kath. And we got the outcome or the result that we wanted with his answer. And it's a fair response.
Yeah.
And I have the utmost respect for him. It's pleasingly that the sentiment towards Zach Butters from footy fans, I think, from what I can gather, is that they respect him for the way he's going about this.
Yeah.
Like, he is giving everything. Like, you talked on the broadcast of Essendon and North about giving more than 100% there and kicking at more than 100% efficiency, which was extraordinary stat. He is kicking and playing at more than 100% efficiency at the moment for Port Adelaide. And so you've got to love that from him. He's not getting worried at all by the speculation. He knows, and I think the whole world knows he's going to go, but he is giving absolutely everything. Whatever's in the tank, he's giving it to Port Adelaide. And that is, for my view, that's you give him the ultimate respect for that.
37 disposals, 23 of which were contested. He won the medal as the best player on the ground. So, he's been immense. 25% of the time, so 1 in 4, a team lower on the ladder in the showdown wins it.
Yeah, that's a high percentage.
Yep.
I would think in terms of teams below the other one on the table and in fixtures, even just through a round of footy, most rounds of footy you get 6 of the 9 favourites sort of win, don't you?
Yeah, that's a sizable uptick. So I think we're happy with everything out of that game. It might be one that costs Adelaide down the stretch.
Oh, you betcha.
Why they didn't send James Peatling to Zach Butters as well, did the job on Cozzy the week before, got smacked out of the middle. So, we've asked a few questions of Adelaide and their midfield, and they haven't addressed it, and that's how they get beaten again. Way back to Thursday night, Brisbane defeated Sydney by 43 points. And I want to ask you this question for our takeaway here, Harv. Was it more good Brisbane or bad Sydney?
If you made me go one, because I think it's a bit of column A, column B.
Always is.
Yeah. If you made me go one, I think it's good Brisbane.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What way?
Well, I think they've had a little bit of a reset through the bye. So they're coming off the bye. And there's just an air about Brisbane that, not they're waiting for the bye just to reset things and get it back on track, but the opportunity for that to happen through that period of time and just get the group back on the one focus for the next 8 weeks to contend again and have a crack at another one, which is absolutely within their grasp. I think that's what happened. We saw a really composed, we saw conviction from Brisbane, I reckon, on Thursday night, which I hadn't seen. And I'm a massive Brisbane supporter. Obviously, most footy fans are, just as a neutral, because they play such great footy. But they haven't played great footy. They haven't looked like they've been the aggressive team of conviction in the last 6 weeks, I reckon.
No, it's pretty simple with that as well, Harv. I mean, if they bring the pressure, which is largely attitudinal,
yep.
I mean, you've coached, is that fair?
Yep.
If they're above the AFL average of 180, they win. And if they're below it, they lose. It's basically been as simple as that. The numbers aren't exact, but basically.
Yeah, and we just saw a renewed vigour from them. I thought the system was good. They used the ball a bit better. Their clearance work, some of their midfield stuff was awesome. So that was great. And that gets them, obviously, territory and advantage and whatever comes with that. But I thought that was it was as well as they've played for a fair bit, Brisbane. To your point, I'm not sure if you're trying to get me to say Sydney were bad as well. Sydney are off.
Yeah.
Sydney are off, and teams are starting to work out that there's ways you can limit their capacity to influence games and score.
Well, those of you who have been loyal on the ABC AFL Daily podcast will know that Ryan O'Keefe spoke about this. That same day I was over there in Sydney interviewing Simon Goodwin.
Oh, yes.
Ryan O'Keefe said this about the Sydney Swans, and we've played it multiple times on the podcast. You've got to remember at this point, they were 7-1 Sydney. They were flying in the season. Everyone was in love with their forward handball game, and Rock said this.
I'm still questionable about this forward handball and the over handball. I think when the pressure comes and it gets finals footy, that can falter because it can cause a lot of turnovers. Teams will come in and press and put forward pressure on, will cough it up. So I'm still, the jury's out with me of this forward handball. I don't know if it's going to stand up to finals.
So that was Ryan O'Keefe all the way back then, swimming upstream. Everyone will tell you now, oh yeah, I knew that, but they're telling you with the benefit of hindsight. Sydney scored 6 points from D50 on Thursday night. 148 metres gained by a hand, quarter two to quarter three, or both of the middle quarters.
Yep.
Not nearly the rate they've been going at. Brisbane came forward, shut it down half.
Which is what Collingwood did to them however many weeks ago that was at the SCG when they nearly pinched that game. They played really well. So Rock is absolutely spot on. And Adam Simpson's been strong about this on the TV coverage of the games too, that front half footy is still where you need to be. That's got to be your foundation. You can do the running, gunning, forward handball stuff from back half as a layer.
Territory game.
But it's a territory game. And I couldn't agree more with him. And Rock's spot on with that assessment all those weeks ago. And we're seeing that a bit. The come forward pressure against Sydney can make a big impact on their capacity to hit the scoreboard. And that's what they were so good at. They transitioned from back to front really easily because teams hadn't worked out how to stop it. But now, and that's what teams do in the bye as well, they don't just reset themselves. They forecast against who they're going to need to beat.
Yep.
And how do we stop them? They've got enough guys in the offices these days to work that out.
And they've got AI now.
Get some hours in front of the AI machine to sort it out. Spot on. Absolutely spot on. That's a good point. Mm. And they work out how to stop them. So Sydney, so Dean Cox, this is a real shot across the bow for him. What's happened the last couple of weeks, I reckon, as to how do we implement another plan, not another full plan, but just a way of playing that gets us the same opportunities to score rather than just having to run and handball forward all the time because they're going to come at us, and particularly in September, you're not getting the time and space.
No. So Brisbane have won three in a row, and I thought some of their players' comments post-game were telling. Levi Ashcroft said, we needed to try and take a scalp. We haven't really taken a scalp. Our teams have tried to peak back end of the year, and we'll try to do that. And Kyle Lohman said, yeah, I think so, our best performance of the year. So all of that was fascinating for me. The Logan Morris snap-on goal, which has since been adjudicated by the AFL as a mistake. This is a mess, half. And the reason it's a mess is because of the cascading issues we have with rules.
Well, this is leading into half series for the week because Greg Swan came into the role and we all saw him as the Minister for Common Sense.
Yeah.
That was effectively the general public sentiment towards Swanee, and he's been a great footy man and he's awesome. But I don't know if this is his portfolio or not, or his leadership or not, but we are focusing and we are worrying about things that are largely not core business for us as footy fans. And you look at what happened to Logan Morris, you look at what happened to Nick Watson a couple of weeks ago, you look at all the boundary touches that we're reviewing. Boundary umpires are reticent to call any decisions when there's a little bit of conjecture about what might have happened because there might have been an incidental touch to a toe, a small toe on the way through. And that's
we didn't even talk about the arc out of the showdown.
And then there's the arc situation. So we've got all this stuff going on, which are superfluous issues to the core of the game. And we're putting so much emphasis and focus on it. As you said before, it leads to other problems.
Yep.
Like it's madness. We've totally taken our eye off the core values, the core business of footy and what it should look like on game day and how that should be experienced by the fans. And I just reckon we've totally lost sight of that. We're dealing with the minutiae. We're in the weeds. Mm. As Ross Lyon would say, we're in the weeds.
Yep.
We don't need to be in the weeds. We need to be focusing on the garden and how beautiful it is and what we need to get it right for spring. And obviously that's September in from a footy perspective. And make sure it's right to go. Yeah. I'm not even half serious. I'm fully serious today. It's the first time I've been fully serious. It's glass half full. It's overflowing.
Yeah.
I'm fully serious because I just reckon we've lost track of the important stuff in footy, and we're focusing on the stuff that is largely irrelevant. And as a result, it's causing more problems down the line.
Yeah. So I feel like the way this has happened, I remember when this stand rule was introduced, I interviewed Steve Hocking that night on radio in Perth. And I said, so if a player has a set shot 30 metres out on a 45 degree angle, imagine there's a line coming out from the centre mark of the goal line on a 45 degree.
Yep.
And he said, if they wish to snap, they can go narrow of that, but they just can't go past it.
Yep.
So that was the origins of that. And that made perfect sense to me.
Yep.
Then they've introduced, well, the stand rule was a part of all of those rules that Steve Hocking has introduced. Then players have worked out, oh, I can exploit that. If the man on the mark's right on the paint at 50 and it's after the siren, I can go narrow of him. If I could just kick 50 metres and I can kick from 52 out, but around the man on the mark, so I don't need as much elevation to kick over the top of him.
Yep.
So closer to goal, not as far out. All of a sudden, I can make the distance. They've said, oh, I don't like that. Isaiah Dudley did it. They thought, oh, that's a bit of a problem. So then they went back and said, okay, you got to kick over the man on the mark at all times.
Yep.
We saw the Nick Watson incident.
Yep.
And then we saw the incident with Logan Morris. So you can see it's this cascading problem that one rule change sort of tips into their necks like dominoes until we end up here.
The law of unintended consequences.
Yes.
That's called.
Yes.
And it's absolutely, and footy fans have been whinging about this for years, that every time they introduce a law, there's another part of the game that gets affected. And we have to introduce a law to deal with that being affected. And it just goes on and on and on. And that's exactly what's happened here. So that one's an easy fix for me. Now I can have a chat to Swanee. We can get him on the show. I'll have a chat to Swanee and say, listen, really easy that one. When there's a player having a shot for goal, the player on the mark is allowed to move. They're allowed to move sideways, jump up and down, do what you like.
Cartwheel. Backflip, whatever it is.
Yeah, face backwards and just do a boogie. I don't know. Why can't the player on the mark? Because it's not... Because the intent of the stand rule is to keep the game in motion.
Yeah.
Once the player's having a shot for goal...
Yeah, the game stopped anyway.
The game stopped.
The aim of the stand rule is to get the ball in motion to create a shot on goal.
Correct.
Which by that point, we've already got it.
We've already got it.
GWS and Hawthorn back on Friday night. This wasn't a great game of football either half. But my question here is, for your takeaway from this game, has your former club, Hawthorn, made a genuine jump to premiership contenders?
Yes, but there's a caveat. Will Day has to play. I think he is the difference between Hawthorn being a contender and just being a competitor in the final series. He is so important to them. What he does to their stoppage work, let alone their centre restart work, how he makes John Newcombe better, how he makes the other mids better because the focus has taken off them for a little while to go and do some work by themselves. He's so smooth and silky, so athletic. He can play tall, he plays small, he's tough, he's inside, he's outside. He's the reason why they can win the premiership. Now, you want to have all the other best players out there too. You need Nick Watson doing his thing. But I think they could still win it without Nick Watson. I don't think they could win it without Will Day. So, yes, they have rocketed into premiership contention as far as I'm concerned, but they're going to need that boy to continue on playing for the rest of the season.
I've got a question about Nick Watson too. So, Ben King's in action right now, but 3 goals behind Ben King as it stands at the moment.
Yes.
Or before Ben King's game on the Coleman medal race. Can Nick Watson win the Coleman medal?
Hope so.
At 170 centimetres. He would be the smallest since Vin Gardner in 1911.
BG, my man.
Yep, 167. Did we speak about this last week?
No.
He was 167 centimetres, Vin Gardner. So
it would be a great story.
It would.
It would be one of the all-time great stories. And what year was it?
1911.
1911, so over 115 years ago.
Just a couple of other points out of this game. So Hawthorn 16-8 centre clearances. Sam Mitchell said pre-game the week before against Gold Coast that was what they worked on in the bye. So we've seen that. That's clearly changed. They've improved that. Also,
who's been back there?
Yeah. Will Day helps, doesn't he?
Will Day helps.
Also, Toby Green just stayed in Melbourne for the weekend.
Did he? Did
spotted
he,
today.
Wasn't spotted on the Ballerine Peninsula by any
no,
chance?
No, no. He was spotted in Melbourne. CBD. Well, not CBD, but central sort of area.
Yeah. Well, he's a Melbourne boy. He's got
he is.
Family here.
Of course he does, but...
But that was Friday night.
When he's linked to a move back to Melbourne, it's just an interesting Interesting one there. Also, what we didn't speak about last week, and I was driving during the week, and I thought, you idiot! I forgot to mention it.
You idiot.
We were talking about the harmonica in the song.
Oh, yes, we were.
And you revealed to me off air, half time of the game, yep. You revealed to me that you introduced the 4-3-2-1 in the Hawthorn song.
Yeah, that's correct.
I meant to bring it up as part of that chat.
That is correct. It's a
tell me about
incredible
this.
Legacy I left at the Hawthorn Footy Club.
It's a legacy.
Well, when you couldn't play that way, you had to come up with something else. So I had to introduce a legacy piece. It was a song. So you know how in the song, riding the bumps with their green, and come on, may you find a striving. Teamwork is the thing that talks. And there was a pause. There was an awkward pause, and it used to annoy me. So I'd just sort of say, hey, or something in the middle of that. And I thought, well, there's got to be something better. And one day, I was at the MCG in the old rooms in the Southern Stand. In that little awkward pause, I said, 2-3-4. And then it was 1-4-all and 0-4-1. And I thought, well, that's no good. We've done that backside about. So next week,
reverse it.
Made sense to go 4-3-2, 1-4-all and 0-4-1. And that's, and I continued, I persisted.
Yep.
And finally it caught on. And now it's a part of folklore. It's a part of folklore. So that is a true story. That is mine.
It's not officially in the lyrics, but you've added it in.
Well,
is it in the lyrics
that's
now?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Let's check that. I like that a lot.
The president about that. It should be.
It should be.
It was just an awkward pause. I hated it.
Yeah.
You just sort of sat there looking at each other, waiting for the next couple of seconds to sing the next word. Didn't make any sense.
Very, very good from you, Half. I love it. Carlton defeated West Coast by 53 points. They've won 6 consecutive games under Josh Fraser. But this is our takeaway. Harry Dean... He's the rising star.
Harry Dean's a fantastic player, isn't he?
Is he the rising star?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I think he is.
So he's up against Jagger Smith. He's up against Willem Dersmer. He's up against... Who else is he up against?
Cooper Trembath.
He's got him covered, I think. Who else? Is there somebody else? I'm missing someone in the rising star market, I reckon. I don't know who that is. But I tell you what, there's not too many key position defenders who can come in at his age in first year and have the impact that Harry Dean's had. And I don't think, I know they had a really high raps on him and they were really buoyant about what he could do sort of midterm. Mm. I'm not even sure they knew he was competitive enough to stand up and be the, because he's been the main man. With Jacob Wiedering out, he's largely taken on the big dogs of the opposition every week and he's kept them to very, very minimal impact in games, let alone being an attacking threat as well at times. He's so competitive. He's dogged. He's all that old school Carlton represents. And I reckon his old man would be sitting there. He wouldn't say much or give much too much away body language style. But he'd be sitting there underneath the face of stone saying, my boy's a gun.
Yeah.
And so should every Carlton supporter. And they are. So he's got to be close. He's got to be close.
He's the best.
I would vote for him. There you go.
Yeah, I would vote for him too. I think you can almost make a case that he'll be around the All-Australian squad. I don't know if he'll be in it, but it's been a heck of a year. Like, he's been phenomenal, Harry Dean. So,
yeah, he's a real find for them this year.
I think it's the best first year key defender performance since Ben Hart. So Ben Hart was All Australian twice in his first two seasons. He was All Australian twice before he was 20.
How old was he? So he's 18, 19, All Australian.
Yep.
Was
first
he?
2 years. Yep. Twice before he turned 20.
Was he?
Unbelievable.
What a player.
Quickly, we'll rush through this. Collingwood and Richmond half.
Yes.
Our takeaway here is that Nick Dacos is on track to do something that's never been done before. He's on track to average 35 disposals and one goal throughout a whole season. No one's done that
before.
No one's
done that. Not even Little Gaz.
Nope. He's done it. He's averaged more than 30 and one. 5 times. There's been 12 guys who have done it in history.
He's five of them. Yeah.
But he never got to 35 and 1. He got somewhere between 30 and 35 on disposals.
Yep. Well, Nick Dacos is a jet. Now, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago about when doing our top fives. He's a jet.
Yep.
He needs a lot of help. He's doing a lot of work. I think, I don't know if they're maximising his talents because of how much work he has to do in the wrong end of the ground. I think that's a problem for the Magpies, but no one has any issues with. Well, that's not quite true. I've had mates who don't like him because of the way he gets some ball. But I think if you watch Nick Dacos often enough, you know that he's an absolute jet and is one of the absolute stars of the game. Not easy to do. 35 and 1's a good. It's pretty good.
Pretty unbelievable.
It's pretty good.
There's just as we go, half.
I just like a bit more support so we could do more damage.
Yep, I agree. As we might get that with Lachie Neal. As we go, there's two important footy names in your fandom as a kid.
Yep.
The name you scream out when you take a high mark as a young kid.
Oh, yes.
And the name you call out when you dribble it from the boundary or snap it from the boundary. Modra was always that for me. Like, I was always, Modra! And probably Dacos or Didac from the pocket when I dribbled it.
Well, I was Dacos for both.
Yeah.
Because I was a massive Collingwood fan. And Peter Dacos was my hero. 35 on the duffel coat. Old school.
Yeah.
Nuffy. That was me.
On the duffel coat?
Oh, yeah. Duffel
coat. It's elite.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love Peter Dacos. So he was my hero. So everything that I did, practicing and out the front, kicking it by myself, I was Peter Dacos. I was taking hangers. I was kicking torps. Because he kicked torps too.
Yeah.
One of the great torp kickers. Kick torps, snaps around the corner, left foot, right foot. I was Peter Dacos through the tree and the lamppost.
Oh, I love it.
That was me.
It's a great topic, and cheerio to Mods if
yes,
you're listening.
Absolutely.
And, it was great to hear the...
So I played against him.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't call his name because I was playing against him. Yeah. Oh, he was something else. Much fun to play against.
He was enigmatic. It was great to hear the audio message from Mods as part of Fox Footy last night. Half, great job as always.
Great to have you, Benny.
Five drops a week. Be a friend. Tell a friend. I get your name on the Wall of Fame.